Pete's Percussion Podcast. I'm your host, Pete Zambito, and we're here with episode 396 and a very special edition of the podcast. This is one of the few timely preview episodes that sometimes occur on the show, and we're with previous podcast guest and former principal timpanist with the New Mexico Philharmonic, Douglas Cardwell, and recent Southern Methodist University in Texas master's degree graduate in percussion performance, Torrance Bunton Jr., to get folks both aware, ready, and more specifically invited to the annual ABOP in LA week, beginning this Sunday, May 26th, and ending the following Friday, May 31st, 2024, in Los Angeles, California. Normally in this segment, I discuss what's been going on either with myself or at Mizzou, and I'll be discussing recent developments in upcoming weeks. But for now, I will get to the significance of this particular episode and our conversation. The Alliance of Black Orchestral Percussionists, or ABOP, was established in 2021 during the pandemic and mostly done over Zoom to support and guide young and emerging Black orchestral percussionists. The leadership of ABOP is a group of seven professionals at varying stages of their careers. Founding member Rainer Carroll, along with Tim Adams, Douglas Cardwell, Michael Crusoe, Javon Gilliam, Josh Jones, and Johnny Lee Lane. I was fortunate to have Rainer Carroll on the show last year, who, among many other topics, discussed ABOP. And I've also had Douglas, Javon, and Josh on the show previously as well. And those episodes can be found with links in the show notes. But I was recently contacted to talk more about ABOP in LA 2024. And I was happy to do so and glad to welcome back ABOP mentor Douglas Cardwell to the show, as well as chat with his protege, Torrance Bunton Jr., who I'm meeting for the first time here. This is also one of the rare times with this show where I will be in a three-way conversation, but it completely makes sense for what's going on with ABOP. Today's conversation will include discussions of the origins of ABOP, the protege experience, what happened at the first ABOP in LA event last year, stories of auditions, practice techniques, and the importance of the organization and this year's event. ABOP in LA will take place in various locations in the Los Angeles area, May 26 through 31, 2024. Please go to their website at abop.us, that's abop.us, and follow them over social media for more specific information. Now let's get to our interview. We recorded this conversation over Zoom on May 17th, 2024, and it begins right now. Let's just kind of briefly, let me just get an introduction from both of you. Douglas, I've had you on the podcast before, but if you wouldn't mind introducing yourself again, that'd be great.
Great. My name is Douglas Cardwell. I'm the former principal timpanist with the New Mexico Philharmonic. I continue to freelance and founding member of ABOP. And also own Lotus Sound Bath, which is a sound healing and sound therapy practice that I present throughout the United States.
Hi, I'm Torrance Bunton Jr. I just received my master's in music percussion performance from Southern Methodist University in Dallas, Texas. I'm currently based here, but I am looking to move and set up in Atlanta, Georgia to freelance and teach. And I'm originally from Tennessee, and I'm currently 23 years old, and I'm a protege for ABOP.
Douglas, back to you. Tell me a little bit about the origins of ABOP and how you came into the picture for this group.
The 150 or so history of classical music in the United States, it's misrepresented with basically population of the United States. And with all of that time, there have probably been around less than a handful or two handfuls, around seven people that have been principal or section percussionists in all of the orchestras in the country. And we looked at this and we started talking And said, how can we change this? And how can we make this more inclusive? And how can we make this to where it's more informational to this is an issue? And how can we come up with solutions? Raynor, Carol, and six of us, seven, I think, in all inclusive, started, and we started these just Zoom meetings with breakouts and just talking about what can we provide? What do we have to offer? We've been here and done this, and it's way different from anything. I mean, I've only had a couple of other jobs that that takes this much attention. And I think I remember when I was 20 years old, and I remember when I was in grad school and what I knew, I had the luxury of, not even the luxury, but I played with at Rice University and had an internship with Houston Symphony. So I was stuck in the fire, really, to where you're understanding or not even understanding, but you're put into playing professionally. And most people don't get that opportunity in their 20s to understand what it takes and to actually be doing it. So we said, how can we provide this with information and opportunities to be able to get this to African-American percussionists?
Who are the other members of the core here for ABOP?
You have Raynor Carroll, myself, Douglas Cardwell, Tim Adams, Mike Crusoe, Josh Jones, Johnny Lee Lane, and Javon Gilliam of National Symphony, yes.
Before you all started to reach out to kind of set this up, what was the, you said this was kind of Zoom breakouts when all this started. What were the ways that you were reaching out to proteges like Torrance?
So literally we had to find the foundation, and ironically and beautifully enough, it happened during COVID when we had the time to sit and chat and when you didn't have a concert each week or something going on. So building that foundation to really figure out how, we already know the why, but how exactly, as you mentioned, Pete, how do we get this information out? And so then we started to reach out with different branches and limbs to other people in different communities around the country. That's when we find out and to link into people like Torrance that are out there, but we don't have a direct correlation with. But after we have the branches out, yeah, I have a student that fit the prototype extremely well. Why don't you give them a call, set up an interview, set up an audition, and then we're off to the races. And it's been great and growing steadily ever since we convened.
Gotcha. Now, Torrance, how did you first become aware of the organization?
I met Tim Adams, who's also a founder, for the first time at an audition. He actually told me about the program and told me to research it. So after that, I went home and I researched it and I felt like it was just a great way for me to get involved with other Black percussionists because, as you know, I mean, there's not a lot of us that look like us. And I really needed that mentorship. I personally did. So I filled out the application. And then Raynor called me and told me about it and gave me some details. And we set up an interview and everything. And I had to send in my audition video. And thankfully, everything just worked out from there.
If I remember correctly, when I talked to Raynor about this, I think one of the things that he had wanted was for as much as possible for the connection to be in person. Now, has that been able to be the case, or has this been actually a lot of Zoom and phone calls, or a mixture of both, Douglas, if you don't mind?
It's been a mixture of both. I think different proteges, depending on where they live, it's a lot easier to have one-on-one in-person sessions. We're always available via Zoom and via phone call as well. But those lessons and those sessions and those masterclasses, a lot of them are personal. And then sometimes because of how much distance you have, it's going to be Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Torrance, same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of it has been on Zoom. I mean, it still works because we get to do what we need to do mentorship wise. We had to come up with a different plan about lessons, getting audio equipment, good audio quality equipment so that we can do lessons and stuff. Douglas has came out to Dallas a couple of times to give me a couple of sessions, and that's been wonderful too. So even though it's been on Zoom, it's still kind of been like a hybrid type of feel because we still got those sometimes in-person type things. So,
and it's huge when you're in person, just the amount of different information that you gather, and going back and I know Zoom is real time, but it just feels different, the nuances. The other thing that can happen, and that we also do, Torrance will actually videotape a mock audition when you have the quality of sound and everything else, and then we'll review it and then send back critique, which is also another method of getting information and growth information back.
What has been so far, Torrance, what has been the kind of amount of time, or weekly, monthly, how often have you been able to have this relationship?
So me and Douglas, we talk on a weekly basis. We schedule something, whatever fits in our weekly schedule. We try to have like one fixed day or set time, but whenever we need to change it, we'll go to the plan B day or the plan C day. So it's more of a weekly thing, especially during the school year, when I was like super busy with so many things going on. It was a lot going on, but it was great. And then whenever I need to play, I would send him videos of me playing and get critique. And even with, not even just Douglas, but I would even send stuff to Rainer too. Yeah. He'll critique me, and I'll sometimes hop on Zoom with him and we'll have little meetings too. So I kind of got like both of the best worlds, but Douglas is my main mentor though.
So that we are coming up on the second ABOP in LA, which is part of what we're doing here. I want to know more about the first one. What was it like to have everybody, or I assume everybody or most everybody there? What was that first year like?
Mm-hmm. Towards, yeah.
Yeah, go ahead. It was the first time that we've all came together. We had three proteges. At the time, it was me, Cameron Richardson, and Jacalyn Bryant. And we all got together with Rainer and some other local musicians who came. And we did a recital. So we all each had a solo piece to play. And we all did some pieces together. And Rainer invited a lot of his colleagues in the area to come and watch in his backyard. And that was the first thing we did, like the first day. And that experience right there was just a great experience, because I got to not only meet a lot of people in the area, but just to make music with other people who look like me all at the same time. And it was a fun time that first day. And then throughout the week, we got to go and see a lot of different things I've never seen before, like the Remo Factory, the Hollywood drum store. Yeah, the Hollywood Pro Drum Shop. And we also got to get a lot of master classes in. We got one with Rainer. We got one in with Wesley Sumter, who is also a freelancer and like a regular subless percussionist for the LA Phil. And we also got a jazz master class with Peter Erskine. I got to go to his home studio, and I think it was in Santa Monica, and that was just a beautiful experience, and it was a great time. And then the later part of the week, we got to also, we were invited to this program called the Rise Diversity Orchestra, and they bring a lot of people of color together, students mostly, to record a soundtrack at the Warner Brothers studio. So that was another thing that we did that was in correlation with ABOP in LA, which was a beautiful experience as well. So for the first time that we've done that, that was just a great time. And now we're going to another level for this second year.
One of the most important things about ABOP in LA and all of the different functions and opportunities that we try to provide is to see that this is a lifestyle. It's happening. It's available. This is what we do. And until you see it and experience it, it's kind of an illusion. I remember what that was like before, you know, I'd played with a professional orchestra, or before you see that regular routine of what it's like. And we talk a lot about this, about the factory, like the Torrance and other proteges, about what it is. And we call them folders. Sometimes we'll have five different folders. A folder is a concert, and you'll have five different concerts that you're working on in 1 week sometimes. And that can be a lot. That can be a lot when you are used to your school orchestra. You have one folder and you have 3 weeks to play, to learn that music. And we talk about what it takes and build up into all of that. So these experience at ABOP in LA is to put you in the atmosphere of what it's like. And they've already experienced it one year. And then, as Torrance mentioned, this is just the next level, the next tier of looking at, hey, I know kind of what to expect this time and what it'll look like. Is it going to be a little different? Of course. And that, but that's just growth. That's a growth period. And we are ecstatic about just being able to provide this, because it's showing actuality of what this lifestyle is, and they get to experience it.
Looking at the schedule, it seems like the maybe the biggest and most important change is actually playing with an orchestra this time.
Yeah, so they played with an orchestra last time, but it was in the Warner Brothers like movie type of setting. So this is geared towards orchestral percussion repertoire and actually getting to play through this literature. Right. It's one thing to listen to it on a recording and play it over and over and play with the recording, and it's great, and you have an awareness of the piece. There's nothing like being able to actually perform that piece or that excerpt. It's just totally different. You can't know that until you experience it. And Torrance has experienced tons of different excerpts that he's actually performed, and that's just going to continue to grow. But we know the difference of what that's like to when you're listening to it and playing it with a recording, until you get that water and you get that air and how it feels and what you really, why the excerpt is really on the list of what it takes to navigate to play that. And that's happened through, you know, the live actual performance. And that's one of the highlights.
I also want to mention last year, I forgot to mention, but I can't not mention it. So we actually got to do one excerpt of Romeo and Juliet, Tchaikovsky, the symbol. Mm-hmm. Where we played all the percussion parts with the Pasadena Community Orchestra. They invited us out for a rehearsal, and that was also another great thing that we did. But this time it's just more abroad this year. You're going to do a lot more.
Yeah, and for kind of following up on that, Douglas, is that one of the things that I'm sure that you've all talked about, but that definitely comes up when I've talked to other orchestral percussionists, is, you know, you get to a setting where if you've played the Tchaikovsky symbol excerpt for forever, you don't know that one conductor will say something that will be different from another conductor that affects the room and the size of the orchestra. And you have to make those mental adjustments to actually fit what's going on.
Exactly right. So along with the repertoire reading sessions, we have, again, the ABOP recital. So all of the proteges have pieces that they've worked up, and we'll have that recital, and along again with master classes from different mentors from ABOP, and we're very excited about that.
Pretty sure, Douglas, we talked about this before, and Torrance, I'm sure you can, I'll have you chime in as well, but one of the challenges that is just part of the lifestyle for, particularly if you're African-American percussionist, is just, and it really goes for anyone who is African-American in any of these orchestras. It's just, you might be the only one, or maybe there's one other person, and kind of dealing with just that aspect of life.
And that's how life on a regular. You go into anything that is in the arts, mm-hmm. on the majority, mm-hmm. the extreme majority. Let me give you an example. Yeah, when I show up to work, I'm the only person of color usually. Sometimes it might be two. It's very rare that you're going to get three or four. You might have a couple of four, but extremely rare. That's rare. When I make that conversation to people of non-color, you know, they make an example of something that's an extreme. Well, I'm talking about everyday life. You know, that's our everyday life. And you can't know what it's like until you experience it. So I try to give as much examples to people. And this is about education. It's not a debate. Right. I'm talking about, hey, have you ever been to a party? I'm talking about work. And typically when I go to a party, I'm still the only person of color. Usually, I mean, where I live, and even when I go out with friends, especially friends from the orchestra, because most of their friends are white or Asian, okay? But it's extremely, do you know what it's like to go into a room and are you comfortable with that? Most people, one, haven't done it, and two, if they have done it, they were uncomfortable. And that's, again, the majority. We're talking about a fact. We're not talking about a real debate. I mean, and I have a few friends that they do it and they are comfortable. But that's, again, rare. We're trying to get awareness of what reality is really like. So I would love for other people to experience that. It maybe not on a daily basis, but they need to experience it. Because if you want to get into a debate, you need to know what it's like.
Yeah. And on this, my background, I've always been in a African American space. Like, I've always been around my people, and it wasn't until that I got to grad school when it actually changed. When I am literally the only one in my studio, the only one in the orchestra. Not the only one in the orchestra, maybe like two or three, but like it's still like a few of us. And that, I mean, just going through that, I mean, it was a culture shock for me in general, just to not have, I guess, a space or someone else there. And I think that stems from just having representation. I think that really matters when it comes to the arts in general, because when you're out there performing and there's other people in the audience and they're looking around and they're trying to find someone, or like they get inspiration when they see someone look like them,
yes, doing
this thing that they want to do. And that is so important, especially to me, as I was that little boy. I was the one who tried to find someone who looked like me in orchestra, and I was always like, you know, pointing out, I would go talk to them. And I just think that's really important. So through ABOP, I'm super grateful to just have mentors that are Black, because I grew up in that. I grew up with Black teachers and all of that, but I never had someone who did like the full lifestyle of being in the orchestra, the auditions and all of that. So I didn't have that.
Audition, yes.
So I'm just super grateful that I could go, because it's not even just about the music. I mean, it's also just about the human experience, the experience. Right. I can go and talk to them about my experiences and how to navigate through things like that too. So it's not just about the music. Of course, yeah, that's the main thing, but the other second half is just having that relationship too.
Yeah, Pete, it's just a pleasure to be able to, because every time I tell a story to Torrance or any other protege, I've already done it. We've already done it. We know what it feels like, you know, and just to share that, it's for them to just stand on our shoulders, use us, literally use us. So again, you haven't experienced it, but we can tell you this, and this 90% of the time, this is what's going to feel like or be like or whatever, but you can't get that other 10% or other whatever 20% until you actually do it. But when you have an idea, you're getting some information ahead of time, that reconnaissance and that knowledge helps. I think it does. I had some of that knowledge when I was, again, in my 20s. Unlike Torrance, I was kind of thrown in that bucket of my people, my Blackness that I was around was only in my neighborhood. Even in my school, where I went to high school, was predominantly white. I would say 70%. So my band, I had probably six people in band that looked like me, which is, that's better than one. But in continuing through undergraduate school and grad school, I was the only one. I was already accustomed to what that felt like. I didn't know the other way. It's lovely to be around. When I play for different organizations like a Sphinx Orchestra, oh my gosh, it feels wonderful because everybody in the room that's in the orchestra is like me. I mean, I'm sure that's what Anglos feel like when they go to work, you know, it's ecstatic. There's a great feeling of camaraderie about it. And that's just, again, not about the music. That's just about people.
I think what happens is that you just around a similar culture. And then we all have the similar things that we've been through. Like I've met a lot of people, other like in my age range, progressionists, and we can talk about a lot of things and we're like, oh, this happened to me too. You know, like stuff like that. And that, I think that's just another level that you just get when you find other people like you.
Yeah.
The experience. That's it. and you can't get there until you experience it. It's great. It really is.
I want to, Doug Douglas, I want to make sure I follow up with something you reacted to when Torrent said auditions, and you're like, woo.
Oh, man.
I just want to know what you, if something came in your head, and I'm just like,
absolutely. Great observation. Auditions are foreign. No one knows what they're like until you do them. And I'm talking about national auditions. We all have the Allstate audition and all that stuff. We go through that. It's great. And then we go to the college audition to get in, and that's great. And then you have a local area audition, and that's great. You know, you kind of are comfortable. Now you got to fly. You got to play on instruments you don't know. And if you don't do these things preparing-wise, mentally and physically and emotionally, of things that you're going to see, I mean, you got to experience that for the first time. And I remember when Torrance's first audition, and we've had a handful now. And in this last audition, and you know, he made finals. You know, out of 40 or 30 people, he's the fourth person. But that comes from, oh, the first one, I didn't expect that. The second one, oh, I didn't expect that. The third one, oh, kind of, I'm getting comfortable a little bit. And comfortable is a bad word. You really don't get comfortable until you take like your maybe 30th audition, and then still may you not be comfortable, but you get to a point to where you know what you're going to sound like when you put enough time in. And it's just a growth. It's a growth that you have to, again, it's about experiencing it. And when you don't play that perfect audition, because there almost isn't one that's a perfect audition, it's just one you played very well. But the things that you did that you learned from that, or I've never been nervous at this section before, or they wanted it faster. What, you just prepare all that stuff the next time, and you just grow.
Torrance, to follow up then, tell us about some of your early experiences already with auditions.
I kind of just threw myself in the water because I knew I needed experience. So I did my first audition back in September of 2023. Yeah, so last year. And I mean, that audition, it was a cool experience. I didn't have an expectation on myself to like be the best like percussionist there. I focused on my personal growth. And then I took that audition, and I learned from that audition, those experiences. And I used those experiences for my next one. So I had other auditions, and like the recent one was the one I really, really I feel like I excelled in, just through learned experiences from previous auditions and things that I've learned from Rainer and Douglas, and just kind of putting that into action, I really helped. I mean, a lot of people don't get like the real time information at my age about how to navigate through, because Spokane, Washington. And that was like only like my second national audition. So I used a lot of the information that I got from my mentors for that audition and put it into work, and it got me to the final round. So I mean, who knows what could happen in the future, but I know that whenever I kept focusing on my own personal growth and my own personal musical goals and all of that, and also not even just the music part, just the mentality of it, because auditioning is like that's another ball game on the mental side of it. You can be the best player in the world, but you also have to be mentally strong to go through the entire process and to be successful in it. So I'm still learning. I'm still growing. The last audition was like, whoa, because it was my first time in the final round. So I was like, okay, what do I do? what do I do now? You know, so now I'm in the process of, okay, I'm glad that I had that experience. Now I know what to do next time that happens. So it's just a stepping stool. You just keep walking up, you keep learning. Yeah.
So Torrance, how much of those auditions so far have been completely blind and how much were behind the screen, not behind the screen?
Oh, they're all behind the screen for me, at least. I think that's a thing that's happening more and more lately, especially like at the final round, they keep the screen up. So at least for me, I've always been behind the screen. There's been like a person there like to monitor everything. But yeah.
What's something on the early side, Torrance? What was something that first audition or the second or early on where you're like, you literally could not have known this until you actually did the audition? They may have said, Douglas and Rainer may have said something to you, but it's not going to get through to you until you're there.
I think the biggest thing for me is waiting. when you're waiting to go, when you're waiting through, because sometimes auditions take so long, and then sometimes they're off schedule, and then you're just sitting there with a room full of other percussionists that you don't know, and you don't know how they play, and you're just sitting there, and just finding your own routine through the audition is important. And I'm still learning how to do that. I'm still finding my own routine, but just like some people, they have their headphones on, they're listening to music, they're reading a book, or they're just, doing something so that there's no like friction in your head or voices in your head. You're just focusing on your own self. You're in your own bubble. I couldn't have known how to do that until I did the actual audition. So
yeah.
what are you doing in the warm-up room? Are you going to play through the music, or are you just going to play on the pad? Like, it's so many things that you learn through just the experience of it. And you just can't do that until the audition day. So
great question, Pete. And great answer, Torrance. I mean, that's it's beautiful, man. It happens as it happens, and you can learn how to prepare for it after you experienced it, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
What was that? So, Douglas, what was an early experience like that for you about the waiting?
Oh, it was the waiting was one, but I wasn't prepared to see other people. I didn't know. I mean, I'm talking about my first two or three or five auditions, right? I didn't know if I was going to be in a single room. I didn't know if I was going to be in the, I call it the VAT room. Everybody's just 20 people, 30 people are in one room. And it's percussion. Has everybody got the practice pad? It's noisy. Even with the practice pad, the energy is just, ugh. It's just like so much energy. Yeah. Yeah. And you can't experience that when you practice. And you can sit there and imagine other people in the room, but you don't know what it's like until you see and feel that energy. So dealing with that, and then, so that's the emotional side, and the has nothing to do with physical playing, right? So that's all the emotional side and the mental side. So after you see that for the first time or the second time, and then okay, how do I want to navigate it? Because it's going to be different for everyone else. How do they deal with nervous energy? Some people are, figure out how you deal with that energy to make yourself the best you can be. But that was one for me that, I couldn't stand it until I had to figure out a way to navigate it.
Yeah, Torrance, you made it, you had a reaction talking about being in the room with the other people.
Yeah.
No more about that.
Yeah, I think it's super edgy because everyone is there, and then you have some people who are friends with other people that maybe that they're doing the audition together. And, you know, I think sometimes some people, you know, you can get caught up in the social aspects of it. But me personally, I'd rather focus on like my, you know, and then after we can hang out, you know. And I was going to say, it's not the most fun thing. It's sitting there and you're just waiting and you're just like, okay, when is my group going to be called to go to the audition room? It's just, I'm not going to like sugarcoat it. It's not like a super fun experience. And you just want to play music, but right. That at the end of the day, that's what matters, is just playing the music.
And an audition is all of those things. And mm-hmm. We're talking about, you know, Torrance just mentioned, he said these handful of experiences and he's now growing into, okay, how is he going to navigate that energy? Because the audition is part of that energy. I mean, you're there. You will have to wait. I've had an audition also that played the first round, you advanced into the second round, and you're in a warm-up. You think you got 30 minutes to warm-up, and they knock on your door in 5 minutes. The committees cut their lunch short, and you're the first person up. You got to be ready to play.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to prepare for both and all. It's just mental, emotional stamina. It's great, but it will grow you as a person.
Yeah, you got to be prepared for anything that could happen. Possibly, like, that's why it's always great to get there an hour early so you can feel everything out. I mean, I got there like an hour and a half. I had my smoothie with me because I knew I wanted to be comfy. And I didn't really, I knew that I don't like to eat a lot of food before auditions. So smoothies are just the best thing for me to get a meal and a quick thing. And yeah, you got to be prepared for anything and alleviate a lot of stress through being prepared.
I would assume it's this way with orchestras, because I always think about on the college side that the audition or the interview for going for a job begins when you get picked up at the airport, and it ends when you get when you're through security, basically. <That's it. laughs> And I'm wondering, Torrance, could you sense that you're like, all these interactions are, I can't, you know, I have to be like, I know I'm focused, but I also need to like realize that this could be a coworker and I have to like think about all that.
Yeah. It depends. Because I didn't interact with a lot of people during auditions really. I mean, I kind of just go do what I need to do, do the audition and then leave whenever. But I do, whenever I get off the plane, I do get that feeling like, okay, I have to be focused and I have to, you know, maintain a sense of calm energy as much as I can. Because I know that whatever, you know, I don't want to get too much in my head, especially the night before. I don't want to get in my head about anything. For me, it's like, okay, after the audition, and then I'm like, okay, all right, moving on. Whatever happens, like, I just move on for the next thing. So that's just been my experience personally.
After you go through this experience of different auditions, you could be on the plane and you see a guy or a gal get on the plane with a snare drum case, you know, and more than likely they're taking the audition. I mean, what do you feel like when you see that? Some people feel a certain thing. Some people care less. It depends on who you are as a person. Just like Torrance said, you need to navigate yourself because you can't navigate others. You know, that's one of the things that I teach about. You can't change others. You can't. So work on yourself to the fact to where when you're having these experiences, you can journal about them, but really figure out what works for you and what doesn't work for you. So you can adjust that the next time. Until the next time and the next time, there's literally almost nothing new. After, I don't know, it's going to be a different amount of auditions for certain people. But I remember after I took so many auditions that the sense of waiting or not waiting, I'm in a group room, or they take you up to a private room. Some orchestras, large orchestras, have space like that. You won't be in a large space. I remember the first time I experienced that. I personally loved it. Some people who get nervous energy, they need to talk to people. They're not going to like that. And you have people that's the case. So it's going to play in others, but you have to navigate what works for you. And when either other happens, you need to, as Torrence mentioned, how do you find your calm? You know, when you're out of your calm, what do you need to do to get present? What does it feel like to walk backstage and then you can hear the person on stage playing before you? What is that like? You don't know until you experience it. It's like, oh man, that person sounds really good. they missed that. Ooh. You know, don't think about that stuff. Keep your focus. But it's a practice. It's a practice to be able to do that. And then when you have these distractions, figure out a way to navigate them.
Torrence, when you did make finals recently, what was there something about that getting there where you're like, I gotta take this one in because this is new information?
Yeah. My other song I was done with my audition that day, I personally was tired. And I had to be present in that, like, okay, how do I feel? Okay, my body feels tired. So I have this X amount of time before I go, had to be back for the final round. So I left. Got some food, got some dinner, took a nap, went to a hotel, took a nap, came back, and got back to it. And I think that was one of the main things that I'm glad I did, because, like I said, anything can happen in an audition, and you're going late at night. It could be 9 p.m. and you're auditioning. I think that experience actually helped me navigate through, okay, next time when this happens, this is what I should do. Especially if I have I had a huge gap between. It may be different. I may have only like an hour.
Get used to what that feels like and get used to practicing both and all in between. And that's I think the learning tool that Torrence has put in his toolbox to know that what he needs to do and which one works for you and which one doesn't work for you, and how do you make it all seem like it doesn't make a difference when it's time to go out and play.
Douglas, so, you know, one of the things that's, I think, interesting, this is kind of going broader, back to broader here about ABOP and just kind of thinking of your generation of percussionists, where, you know, for a long period of time, you may have known of some of your other colleagues, but it's also possible you didn't, because just like no social media. And so I'm just wondering about what it felt like in those early years for you of, I know there's more people like me, but.
Oh yeah. I think I understand the question, Pete. You mean, so when I first started playing, you know, did I know, did I know the members
of Raynor? Did you know about him?
Exactly. Yeah. I knew of Raynor, I knew of Tim, and I knew of Mike, but I hadn't spoken with him. I hadn't hung out, and I met Raynor. I'm not going to say the year. It was a long time ago. And I played for Raynor, actually, in L.A. when I was in a program in L.A. And then when I was on a committee, on the orchestra committee, Mike Crusoe, we had a convention, and I met Mike for the first time. I mean, it was great. But like you said, it wasn't social media where you can just jump on or whatever. I didn't have their numbers, and I knew they existed, but I didn't have their contact. Is there a way I could have gotten it? Yeah, sure, but it's not as easy as it is today. I mean, yeah, so being able to have that comfort across the table, it wasn't. Yeah, it wasn't. So when we did finally meet, I mean, it was great. I can't imagine what Torrence is feeling, because I didn't have that in my 20s or 30s. And that's why we are here.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I'm glad it happened. I mean, because when I got to grad school, I was kind of like very isolated for the first time in my life.
Yeah.
I mean, like, not even just like culturally, but just moving to a new state, going to a new school, starting my adult life for the first time. And yes. It was like this whole other layer to it that I'm just super grateful.
So Torrance is getting ready to move. And again, you know, that's typical in our industry. I think Torrance asked me for some things, or what did you do when this happened? And I gave him a lot of information and some other tools, letters and stuff like that, of what I did when I moved. And I want him to use that, ask for more, and then make them his own. You know, I had to create that letter myself. I didn't have anybody give me a letter, but I want to be able to give him that letter so he can use that and grow. You know, I don't want him to generate that on his own if we can help him, you know.
And there's so much information that I can definitely say has been gatekept in the classical music community about where to get lessons. How do I even take an audition? How can I practice to be successful? It's just so much that's been gatekept, and I think I feel like it can get like cliquish and like stuff is just preserved. But I am personally, and this is what I want to do in my, you know, when I become like another Douglas or another Rainer, is to not have a gatekept and just to make sure the information is known like this, because a lot of people can say, hey, you just practice a lot, but you can't just practice. It's a certain way you have to practice that you just can't go. Okay, I'm going to learn notes. And I didn't know how to practice. I found out I didn't know how to practice until I met Douglas and he showed me the ropes. So there is a certain technique, a certain way, a certain skill, practice skill that you have to implement to learn music, especially in a productive way. And I started to learn music at a faster rate, like with that process, and rewire my brain through the old way I was doing that I thought was right, which really wasn't right. And I'm still rewiring my brain now, because it's a skill that I have to learn for the first time in my life, and taking my 10 whole decade plus years of being in the music of ways of doing things and just turning it around, which I think has helped me a lot in through just my grad school career and learning music at a faster pace, learning music in a way that you are not going back and relearning things.
Yes. Yes.
But it's true though. It's true. And I want other people to know that too. So.
Yeah, man. I love hearing you say that, man, because that's what we want you to, you know, I call it becoming your notes. You don't need your notes anymore. You become what that is from what you're learning. And I remember the day when I didn't know how to practice. I mean, oh, it's painful. Could you play well? Yes. Did you have chops? Yes. Yeah. Longer and harder to get the same amount of material after you learn how to practice. I was at one institution and I went to another institution. And in between this time, I learned a couple of different things that I use today. And literally I was playing 2 to 3 times the amount of music in half as much as duration of time. And it's possible, but just like Torrance said, there's a way to practice. And it's not just practice. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that gets a back to that point about the 5 folders.
Oh yes.
Oh, you said, and how do you deal with all that music that you gotta play in 4 days?
Yeah. I had a professor once. He says the symphony orchestra is a factory. You know, I was in an undergraduate school. I said, a factory, man. It's just you just playing music, man. You got to love that. You got to love it. And it's just you just playing music. Well, I didn't understand what he meant until I had those 5 folders. You know, you crank it out. What did you play last week? I don't know. I'm working on this week. You know, you forget. I mean, because you have to get the stuff in for the next one. And it's amazing. And it's a wonderful way after you get And I see Torrance doing. He's using it, man. A certain way to practice the things that you practice the stuff you don't know, the stuff that you know and can play.
And I have colleagues and peers who are like asking me, "How did you learn that so quickly? What did you do? Like, you just started learning this and you learned it in like a week. Like, how did you do that?" And I'm like, "Well, I just practiced it slow." And they're like, "Slow? What do you mean? Slow? I mean, yeah, I mean."
No mistakes, man.
Just don't practice. And with so much I had so much going, like this past semester, and I was taking auditions on top of performances, concerto, concerts, all of that. And it's a skill. It's definitely a skill, a time management skill as well. How are you using your time? Oh, you only have 10 minutes on this one thing. Okay, I'm going to work on this one or two measures with the time I have, because that's the time I have. And I'm glad I learned that early on, because now that I'm not in school, I just graduated, I'm not going to have a lot of time, especially like the time I did have, like an all day type of thing where I had the whole day. Maybe had like one class, but I had.
Yeah, that's going to go. That's going to go bye bye. Hey, you know those summers off, man? That's going to go bye-bye, too.
It's funny. I was thinking, I'm sure Douglas has had this effect where you know, Terrence, you're talking all about, like, what'd you play? Like, I don't know what I just played. But there's times where you'll get music and you'll look at it and be like, oh, that's my handwriting. You, like, have no idea. Yeah. Wow, I played this, I guess.
But you don't remember.
So what is the plan for what's going on during the week? How are days going to kind of progress as they move forward?
The first day, we're going to have our recital rehearsal. That's the first thing we're going to do when we get there. And then we're going to go to the Grammy Museum downtown L.A., and have some dinner. And then we're having a mastery class with accessory instruments with Mitchell. I think he's one of the percussion educators in the area. And then the second day, and I'll just go through everything. The second day, we're having a workshop, like a college contemporary workshop. And then we're going to have a little barbecue Memorial Day dinner at Rainer's house, a little celebration there, which is going to be super fun. Then Tuesday, we're going to have another masterclass about survival skills for the working percussionist with Ricky Burkhead, who is also another percussion educator out Ole Miss, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Ole Miss. Then we're going to go to the Pro Drum Shop in Hollywood. Then I think we're going to take a look at the Hollywood Bowl, which the LA Phil performs there every summer. And then later that night, another masterclass about the history of the rudiments with Johnny Lee Lane. Then Wednesday, another rehearsal for our recital. And then we have a little break period. And then we're going to rehearse with the Repertoire Reading Orchestra that night and have dinner. And the orchestra, I believe, is about 70 members strong. So it's going to be a full orchestra, and we're only going to be playing through certain excerpts. So like Beethoven 1, the Coda to the End, like Lieutenant Kijay, the opening, Scheherazade 3 and 4, those, just a lot of standard stuff that I feel like I personally wouldn't have gotten a chance to play until like I got into a professional orchestra setting.
No, that's great. That's the intent again. How do you get as much information that feels like the actual gig before you guys have the actual gig?
And then, so this is Thursday. So we're having another rehearsal for the recital. And then I will be personally be doing a mock audition that afternoon, which would be open for anyone who wants to come. And then another timpani masterclass with Mike Crusoe that night as well. And then the last day, we are having our performance for the recital.
Back full. That's like, just like a regular week. So that's good.
That's a very full 5-6 days. That's awesome. Is there anything that I haven't asked or got from either of you that you want to say either about ABOP or about the experience?
I love the aspect of protege to protege and having them connect. I remember when I was in grad school, one of the greatest things about grad school was my mentor said, you're going to learn a lot from me, but you're going to learn a different amount from your peers who are the same age that are navigating the same things you are. And you guys aren't experiencing the same thing, so share those so you can continue to grow immensely, because your mentor is on a different level. They're giving you certain types of information, but you're going to gain information from people like you around your same age. So that's what I love about protege to protege, where they reach out to each other and gain knowledge.
So I love the general aspect of meeting other people, because we have these quarterly Zoom calls. We have these ABOP exchange Zoom calls. It's actually open to the public, but we all get together from around, like everyone from around the world, whether you're a teacher, educator, performer, freelance, whatever it is, you want to get connected with us. We all get together and we just talk, and we talk about certain topics, right, whether it's about whatever topic we want to talk about, education or performing or whatever. And I feel like I meet someone new every time that I never know. So I love meeting other people. I love that aspect of it and the community around it, for sure. Even though it's virtual in today's time, and I think the pandemic really played a big role in keeping, having like a virtual space. And I think that helps us stay connected.
Hey, just to follow up, Torrance, it's just, we're all now used to doing that. So it's like, so it's not like it's not the worst. Like it used to be the worst thing. It's like, all right, it's fine.
It's actually great, and especially in terms of networking and stuff. It's because I mentioned that I'm moving to Atlanta over the summer, and there's people out there that I know because of ABOP, like Teddy Hall and Don Parker, who are current like educators and freelancers out there. And they're helping me get connected and kind of get into the groove and the works of what was happening out there.
Yeah.
So it's just a great way to just meet a lot of people that you've never known. I think that's a valuable aspect.
Just the inclusiveness of anyone and everyone are welcome to check out ABOP and come into some of the meetings that are open and chat about it, just to get to more knowledge of what ABOP is about and more knowledge about, you know, how we want this thing to go forward and the symphony orchestra to look like and being okay and being comfortable, you know, and sharing it all. So that's very important. So go check out ABOP.
Yeah. Everything Douglas said, I agree. Come check us out. Come learn more about our mission. And if you're like someone that's my age, come try to check out the Protege program and see if it's a great fit for you.
Right on.
A real pleasure getting to reconnect with Douglas Cardwell and meet Torrance Button Jr. here. And I hope for amazing futures for both of them. Thank you, Douglas and Torrance. In lieu of a rave this week in this segment, I will restate and say what I do on these preview episodes. Please support these folks and their event. If you find yourself traveling to or reside in and around Los Angeles, please go and see all of the ABOP events. Again, the second ABOP in LA is May 26th through the 31st, 2024. Please go to their website, abop.us, for more information, as well as find them on social media. On Facebook, they are at the Alliance of Black Orchestral Percussionists, ABOP, and on Instagram, they are found under abop.us. Follow, support, and check out ABOP in LA. You won't want to miss it. And that's our show. Subscribe to the podcast and Apple Podcasts and leave a comment and a rating. Find every episode and the show notes at the homepage at petezambito.com/Pete's Percussion Podcast, the episodes. The show is also on SoundCloud and Spotify and many other podcast locations. If you're on Facebook, like the page Pete's Percussion Podcast. You can find me there on Instagram and X at Pete Zambito or by email at petesperkpod@gmail.com. And I will catch you next time. Go see ABOP in LA.